And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the whole country is undergoing trials of every kind and every sort. Of course, Trump's trials are the most publicized. Have you been following the one in New York?
Yeah. I guess we call these things trials and tribulations. The one in New York, I think, has gone far better than a lot of people predicted and for the prosecution. You apparently had real lawyers knowing how to present a case, and they strategized it well. We still haven't heard from Michael Cohen, who's expected to be one of the big witnesses. But we had Stormy Daniels on the stand. But it was all the preliminaries and how they laid the groundwork to this that I thought went pretty well. And Trump's lawyers ran into the same problem that the lawyers he's had in civil cases. And that is their client. They seem to feel that they have to put on a particular type of show for their client rather than the best presentation for the law. And it really has detracted from the defense. Now, it's not over, and we don't know what the jury's thinking, but the other part of the trial, and I think this is maybe the most interesting thing, is Trump himself and what it's doing to his psyche. I read an article about, his malignant narcissism, but this is another phenomenon. I forget the term they used, but it's essentially because he is unable to control things. He has to sit there while a judge who he hasn't been able to intimidate is holding him to the rules that other litigants would have to follow as well. He's given Trump a little bit of leeway, but he doesn't have much. He's been held in contempt now for 10 different things he's done. That I think is the most disheartening thing to him. His tactics don't work inside the courtroom. Now he tries to every day spin things as soon as he leaves the courtroom, but he is constrained to some extent. And the judges pointed things out this week. When they were talking about some of the salacious stuff that Stormy Daniels was either asked or answered on the stand. And the judge said to the lawyers, look, folks, I agree some of this stuff may not have been that relevant to the case, but you didn't object. And of course, they're trying to distract the jury from all the paper evidence, which is the strongest part of the case. So we'll see what happens this coming week when Michael Cohen gets on. He could either be the icing on the cake for the prosecution, or he could blow up on the stand in his desire to get back at Trump. Remember, he's the guy that went to jail, and he wasn't the one that the payoff was to benefit. It was Donald Trump. So in sense of fairness, if your agent goes to jail and the principal doesn't, that doesn't seem or sound right.
If I were the prosecution, I wouldn't let Cohen testify. I don't think they need him. That's number one. I think he's a wild cannon, a loose cannon, number two. And I think that if one juror thinks that he's lying, the case is over. They only need one.
They only need one.
Right. So if any of the jurors think that Cohen's a liar And I think Cohen can't help but be looked upon as a liar. But if they really get convinced that he's a liar, the hell with all the paperwork. He'll just blow up the case. I wouldn't put him on. I don't see that they need him. I mean, I can see that if he were a perfect witness, that he's the icing on the cake. But the checks are the checks. The people who transmitted and transferred the checks, they were believed. They said this is how it worked, and I did it. It was clear that Trump didn't let a nickel get spent that he didn't approve, and that was his modus operandi all the time. So what do you need Cohen for? Why take the chance?
I don't know. It just may be that he has to tie something with intent up with him, but it's a close call.
But on the whole, I think that Trump's strategy. See, now there's a problem here in this discussion, because Trump's strategy is political, not legal. Mm-hmm. Of course, as a lawyer, you're paying attention to the way the legalities of the thing work, the way the tactics in the courtroom work. I think that in political cases, there's always a split between the politics of the trial and the legalities of the trial. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they diverge. And this is true in all of history. I mean, you can look at significant political trials, and the person who is defending himself doesn't pay attention to the legal rules, because he wants to make a political point, or she wants to make a political point. And that point is significant. And that may convict the person legally, but it acquits him in the court of public opinion and in the political world. In Trump's case, we all know that his group of supporters have been solidified by the political approach that he's taken in the trial.
Yeah,
and it's even worked legally, because look, of the four trials, only one of them managed to proceed. The others are never going to get to court before Election Day.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the court of public opinion. And that's what he's been playing to.
Right.
I just don't, you know, it seems like it may have solidified his base, but they were pretty solid behind him by the time this trial took place. The question is, what's it doing to the independents who are hearing this? And that's, we won't know. First of all, we won't know until the verdict is rendered. And we'll have to see after that.
Well, but politically, if the thing worked politically, even if he got acquitted or even if it was a mistrial, if it worked, independents would say the guy's guilty. He got off on a fluke. The hell with him. I'm not voting for him. If that's not the result that the independent comes to, then the trial is a failure.
You know, we had some indication, though, this week, because in the state of Indiana, there was a primary election.
Right.
And both Trump and Nikki Haley were on the ballot.
Right.
Even though she dropped out. And she didn't campaign. She didn't spend any money. But and Indiana's a pretty conservative state. And the Republicans went into there, and 22% of them voted for Nikki Haley.
Well, we had the same in Pennsylvania, didn't we? I mean, statewide, didn't Nikki? Nikki Haley
got 18%.
18% of the vote, right?
Right.
He loses 18% of the Republican vote. He can't carry Pennsylvania.
Can't carry most, any of the swing states.
No, but I mean, he really has to lose one of Michigan, Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania, he loses if that's the kind of if those people won't vote for him if they stay home. You don't have to vote for Biden. If the Democrats get the Biden vote out, even if they, the hell with the rural areas, if they really follow through on the strategy, which I don't think is a good one, of concentrating on Philly, Harrisburg, and Pittsburgh, and they pull the vote out, and he loses, let's say not 18%, let's say 10%, he loses the state.
Well, there was an article out this week that used Wisconsin as an example, and they said that the Biden campaign has already started establishing beachheads in Wisconsin, and that they're going to do that in Michigan and Pennsylvania, and they're going to work some of those rural counties. understand it's the Fetterman strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
Understand
the Dean strategy.
They're not going to win those counties, but they're trying to cut into the margins that Trump has. If that works, it worked for Fetterman. If it works, and the thing is, the Biden campaign has had a lot more money to use than the Trump campaign. They've had 150 million. Trump's got about 60 some million going, and Trump's money is all going to his lawyers.
Well, Trump campaign has come up with some weird approach to this election because they're planning on not having a big on-the-ground operation anywhere. They don't want to open up field offices. They want to rely on the internet, on email. They don't care about a get-out-the-vote operation. Now, I don't know if they're saying that because they don't have the money, but I do know that Trump spoke to the oil and gas industry down in Mar-a-Lago this week, and he asked them for $1 billion, and he promised to scuttle all green initiatives.
Right.
So, now I don't think he needs $1 billion for his law, for his lawyers.
No. And I think there's going to be a question whether you get $1 billion after these people. They've got other ways of trying to scuttle these initiatives. But we'll see.
But the point is the method of campaigning that the campaign announced doesn't require $1 billion.
You know, this is the opposite of what happened in 2020. Remember with the pandemic, the Biden folks were not going door to door, and the Republicans were.
Right.
And they came fairly close with that.
Right.
We don't know. We'll just have to see if the Biden switch now that says we're going door to door will help and work. I don't think it could hurt, but it takes a lot of effort.
I don't know if he has the ability to mobilize the ground forces.
Yeah, if he doesn't have the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll have, like I said, that method of campaigning. We'll have to see what it is. Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, we talked about the down ballot races are heating up. The McCormick folks and those independent agents, so-called independents that are supporting him, are out with ads. They're not really anti-Casey ads yet, so to speak. They're trying to boost McCormick's image, and they're also trying to portray him as a Pennsylvanian, even though he's lived in Connecticut for most of the last 16 years or so.
They can't tear Casey down. Maybe they think he's just,
people know
he's a guy that's clean. He hasn't done anything bad. He hasn't taken any money. He hasn't had any infidelities. Maybe you can't really knock him down.
The Casey name is a good name in Pennsylvania. It was for his father, and it has been for him. So, you'll have to see that. That is. Meanwhile,
but does he bring votes to Biden?
Well, that's a question. Certainly, if people weren't supporting it, would hurt Biden.
Right. Right.
And the fact that Casey's from Scranton. Green Ridge guys, I think they're going to work hand in glove on this. Matt Cartwright came out, signed a letter with a dozen or so other Democrats urging Biden to take more action on the border. I don't know why he's done that, unless there's polling that's showing that it's some sort of a big interest. For the voters in his district. We'll see if the crime issue comes up. Matt Cartwright has effectively portrayed himself as someone who's pro-law and order. He's supported police departments. He's gotten ads in the last campaign from police chiefs and things like that. So I don't know what else there is.
But he's in a situation where his opponent doesn't count, right? I mean, did anybody know the opponent? The opponent wins only if Trump really romps in Lackawanna County, right?
Yeah. And I think Luzerne County and Monroe County are going to be the big issues. Cartwright will do well in Lackawanna County. Luzerne County is something else. We don't know. It's continued to drift towards the Republicans, and we don't know what's going to be at the end of by November in that regard. There's a lot more votes in Luzerne County than in Lackawanna County. But his opponent, as you said, has done nothing.
Yeah.
He didn't have a primary opponent. And sometimes that's not good because there's nobody paying attention to your campaign. He's done no advertising. I'm sure he's out talking to other Republicans, but nothing.
But that didn't help Mastriani. He only talked to other Republicans. He got nowhere.
Yeah. Well, and he was much more fringe. Bresnahan has a different background to sell, that he's a businessman and those kind of successes. But I don't, I'm not very impressed by the campaign so far and what kind of spending he's done. I don't know.
Is he well funded?
Supposedly, the Republicans are going to have this as one of their districts that they want to fund, thinking because it's a pro-Trump district overall, that they think that they can flip this district. Now, they've thought that for the last three cycles, too.
Yeah.
And it hasn't worked, although Matt Cartwright's margins have gone down, despite the fact that he had Joe Biden at the top of the ticket this last time. But you still have to have a campaign. Bresnahan doesn't have campaign experience. He's never run for anything. Cartwright's opponent in the last two times was Bognet, who did have campaign experiences. So the nature of that race is going to be somewhat different.
Well, that's an important race. I mean, Cartwright has a lot of seniority at this point.
Right.
And the Democrats could take the House. You know, they don't need much.
Right. And the Susan Wilde race, where she has a little bit of Luzerne County or Monroe County now, I'm sorry. She's always had some marginalized things. There was a primary fight there in hers, but that's another district that they're looking at. So, you just have to, as the thing plays out, we'll have to see.
I'll tell you something that is looming this fall that isn't going to be good for the Democrats, and that is that the super spending that the federal government did in an attempt to get public schools, the primary schools, to recover from COVID by appropriating in the 2020 and 2021 year, they appropriated for education six times the annual budget for appropriation to be distributed over a two or three year period. That funding is coming to an end in September. And this extra money that every school district in the country got is going to disappear. And analysts are saying that that could lead to the layoff, the firing of 385,000 teachers and support staff in the country. That will be a major, major disaster because it'll be concentrated in poor neighborhoods, in schools in poor neighborhoods, because they're the ones who use this money and can't make it up. Scranton is a place that will really suffer, and Biden will be blamed, even though Biden produced the money and couldn't get the Republicans to renew it.
Well, that's the whole question. When people blame the Republicans for not, when Biden says we want to renew it or not. Those are the two strategic choices there.
Yeah. Well, it's Biden's on the horizon. If they're not preparing for it, they're going to have a whack in the back of the head with a 2x4 in the fall. It's really terrible.
Yeah. Among other things.
Yeah. Well,
speaking about a whack in the back of the head, how about Robert Kennedy Jr.? This week it came out one of his previous depositions in a divorce case. He admitted that he was having memory problems and blamed it on a worm that invaded his brain and ate part of his brain.
Well, that could be true. It's not uncommon.
In
third world countries, that's right. In fact, I don't think people know why it happens, but it does happen. Of course, not everybody whose brain has been eaten runs for president. Or maybe everybody who runs for president has had his brain eaten. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the question. You know, you have to be
crazy to want the job, right?
Job, that's right. Yeah. It's the old catch-22.
Yeah.
And if you're that crazy to want the job, maybe you're not qualified to do it.
Exactly.
I said that. By the way, talking about brains, it came out this week that the president of Scranton School Board, Ty Holmes, who's a pretty impressive credentials and personality, had to have emergency brain surgery down in Philadelphia.
Really?
This week. Oh, yeah. The initial surgery apparently went well, but he still has issues that have to be addressed.
Well,
so we're hoping the best for him. I did want to mention that.
But while we're on schools, what about Keystone College?
I'm just going to go there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to go there, you're going to be one of the few because...
Well, that's a local, that's a local institution. It started as Keystone Academy. The great pitcher, Christy Mathewson, went there.
That's right. There's a sign up on the highway in front of it. Christy Mathewson. I'm sure nobody who's driving by there, or almost nobody, knows who Christy Mathewson was. But there is a billboard with his picture on it.
And they've apparently run out of money.
Yeah.
And there's a question whether the administration is being straight with the students and their publicity. They've tried to sell the school or have buyouts and accreditation institutions have said, no, you're not prepared to shut this school down properly.
And you really? May have
to. Yeah. So they said that they have to have a shutdown plan and that they haven't made a plan that they feel works. So,
A lot of those students are from out of state. There's a lot of New York City students who go to Lackawanna, to Keystone.
Yeah, and there's some, and there's locals as well.
Yeah.
Some
years ago, Keystone had one of the preeminent art departments in the country, with a special specialty of pottery. And there a whole potter's community that developed in Lackawanna County and in Susquehanna County because really of the classes being given at Lackawanna, there were dozens and dozens of potteries in the two counties. People came from all over. It was really significant. Well, they closed it down some years ago, and 3 years ago, they shut all of the art programs down, all the studio art programs. Done.
I know they used to have a very active arts program. They had a culinary school.
Yeah.
And
gone.
they were big on astronomy too. You wonder what their game plan was, particularly in comparison to Lackawanna College, which has grown and grown and grown.
I know.
And added
buildings, bought up a lot of downtown Scranton.
Yeah, and working with the fracking industry. They've had things. So we'll have to keep watching that. By the way, speaking of schools and names of schools, did you see down in Virginia, there's this one school board that decided that they're going to restore the names of Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee to their schools?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
It's, the South shall rise again. They never give up.
No.
Their only justification was that well, it was taking the names off was done in haste. How about the fact that it was done to make things right, that we not honor traitors to the country,
right,
who wanted to preserve the the institution of buying and selling human beings?
Right. That doesn't count.
Well, they can't teach kids about that much anymore because they don't want to make the kids uncomfortable.
Right.
As if they shouldn't be uncomfortable about slavery.
They should be uncomfortable that they don't know. They should want to know. They should. Isn't that what drives humanity forward? Being uncomfortable about what you don't know? Trying to find out things you don't know?
Well, I think there's a lot of philosophy, particularly in the Republican Party, is I don't need to know things. I know what I know, and that's enough to know.
Yeah, but there's a poem about that. If someday, what is it? If perchance someone should come up to you and say, I know nothing about art, but I know just what I like, you should answer, so do monkeys in the park.
Huh. I thought you were going to quote the former Secretary of Defense, who said there are known unknowns and unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
All of those things.
Yeah. No, the real one that the Republicans should make you think about is Mussolini's son-in-law, Count Ciano, who said famously, when I hear the word culture, I reach for my revolver.
Huh.
Because that's the mentality. That's the mentality. Disregard for knowledge, contempt for knowledge, sneering at science, boosting ignorance and brutality. It's, you know, the testosterone image, the Rambo image. That's the Republican ideal.
Well, they view their constituency as the lesser educated parts of the public, the non-college graduates.
But the non-college graduates who may not be as well educated are nonetheless smart people. They may be misled by the fact that they don't know things that they could know and should know, but that doesn't make them dumb. These Republicans treat them as if they're dumb, as if they can be led by the nose. It's true, Lincoln said you can lie to some of the people all of the time and all of the people some of the time. And that's what the Republicans, this group of Republicans do. They lie to these people, some of the people, all of the time.
All of the time. Yeah. All of the time.
Yeah.
All of the time.
So but people get inured to it. They don't care.
Well, and the other thing is that they view the Democrats as looking down upon them.
Right.
As being an affront to their persona.
Yeah.
And as a result, they tend to cleave to the Republicans, even though it's not in their best interest. And this is an old story. What's the matter with Kansas?
No, and what counteracts things like that are institutions, progressive institutions, like unions, where all kinds of people meet, engage in common struggle for common benefits, common interests. And so people learn to trust people who are not just like they are, but are very different than they are, except in the fact that they share common needs and common interests. And it leads to a progressive society. Well, destroy those institutions, as the Republicans have spent 50 years doing and have succeeded, and you destroy the opportunity for the average person to get that kind of lived experience. And then naturally, that person without that lived experience is prey to any kind of crap that the Republicans will throw at them, or any demagogue will throw at them.
Well, we had that experience this week with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who tried to bring down the Speaker of the House again.
Yeah.
And cause more chaos into Congress. And she failed. And she knew she was going to fail.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's the effort and all the PR and propaganda around the effort.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to see a lot of PR and propaganda after Cohen testifies Monday. So we'll have something to talk about. If nothing else happens next week, we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Happy Mother's Day, Mother.
See you next week.
Bye. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.